Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
You're listening to a Countout Podcast.
Hold one. Arm drag.
Don't tell me.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Hit the Books Review AEW Revolution. I am Ryan Knightstein. With me, as always, is...
Who is it?
I'm throwing it to you.
Ryan, do we have a special guest?
No, it's not a special guest. It's you, my friend. You're
me?
My special guest.
Hi, I'm Mikey Manfredi. How's everybody doing?
Oh, my God, this intro is falling apart immediately.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie, that was rough.
Oh my God! Well, we're starting. Let's start over. And 3, 2, 1. AEW Revolution. I am your host, Ryan Knightstein. With me, as always, is
Mikey Manfredi.
Yeah, you don't get any special intros because this isn't the proper Hit the Books podcast.
It's like you don't even care about me anymore.
Yeah, when it comes to reviews, I don't care about Mikey anymore. He's just like here as well. He's not a special guest. He's just here. He showed up today. So did I, I guess. No, that's a bad energy to have on an opening of a podcast. Let's start over. AEW Revolution. I'm your host, Ryan Knightstein. With me, as always, is...
Mikey Manfredi for the third time.
For the three-peat dog. Oh, he shoots. He misses.
I wonder which one of those we're going to go with.
All of them. Anyways, thank you, everybody, for... listening to this special review of All Elite Wrestling's Revolution pay-per-view. Took place out of Chicago, Illinois, in the Wintrust Arena. Mikey and I both watched it. Mikey, give me some overall thoughts on the pay-per-view this weekend, or past weekend.
I think, all in all, this was probably their best one yet, in my eyes.
Whoa.
It was definitely the one I have enjoyed the most so far. I think every match delivered to a certain extent that was very good, and I very much enjoyed watching. I mean, there was some stuff I expected a little bit more out of, but that's not to say the matches still didn't deliver. And I thought every match was good to great, and there was no bad ones, I don't think.
Yeah, I would largely agree. I don't know if personally it's my favorite pay-per-view. It's not the problem, but it's just like all of the pay-per-views are like really good.
Yeah.
To amazing, so it's like really tough to even be like, I don't know, but
all right, AEW, yeah, like, here's a pitch. You got to do one bad one. No, all these good ones are getting ridiculous. We can't. It's getting too hard to pick a favorite.
Well, like, I'll even say that, like, it's... So, to take an example, to sadly dunk on another brand, NXT TakeOver. A lot of people would say that last NXT TakeOver in Portland was amazing. Said that it was, like, the best NXT TakeOver ever.
I'm still trying to watch that. I still need to get behind that. I wanted to to watch that because I've heard it was amazing and I really want to see it for myself.
It's amazing, and I highly recommend watching each match individually, like a week apart.
Okay.
Because I sat down and watched all 3 hours back to back to back to back to back, mm-hmm. all those matches, and so much. It's like, man, this match is really good. This match was also really good. This match was okay. This match was also very good, kind of similar. And it became this issue where it's like every match was amazing and had these very big emotional, weighty stakes and everything. And you're like, personally, I was getting like bored by the time we got to the Ciampa Cole match,
mm-hmm.
where it was just like, okay, this is the same thing I've sort of seen already for the past 3 hours. And it's like a weird thing to make an issue about. But the reason I'm saying this is that is All Elite Wrestling's Revolution, all of it, like, top-down, it felt like a good pay-per-view. There were some stuff that, like, weren't, like, amazing. But mm-hmm. I think what it does, what Revolution or All Elite Wrestling does its best, at its peak, is that it makes it a variety show. So the style of wrestling from a Jake Hager, Dustin Rhodes match is completely different than a Pac, Orange Cassidy match.
Or a Sammy Guevara, Darby Allin match.
Yeah, the variety of wrestling, or even MJF, Cody, Southern style wrestling match. It's like the style of wrestling is 100% different. It's not the same exact thing. So, you know, some stuff could be... Like everything's like at least good, but it just comes down to maybe my personal taste.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's how I felt about Revolution. Again, amazing pay per view. I don't know. I don't know. I gotta look back and like the first one was really good. Double or Nothing.
Yeah,
2019. That was really good.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's get into it. Let's get to the card of AEW Revolution, Mikey. We're going to start off, the format of this show is going to be, we're going to do the semi-main, which of course is Pac versus Orange Cassidy first, and then we'll go back up to the top of the card, starting with that buy-in match, Dark Order, SoCal, Uncensored, and then, you know, Hager, Rhodes, Darby, Sammy, yada, 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 all the way back down to the AEW World Championship match of Moxley versus Jericho. Mikey, are you ready?
Yeah.
Well, let's start it off with that semi-main. It is Pac defeated Orange Cassidy with the Brutalizer submission hold in 13 minutes exactly. Mikey, you're a huge fan of Orange Cassidy. I know this for my heart. I am also a big fan of Orange Cassidy. This was my potential match of the night going into this.
Mm-hmm.
My dark horse match. Of the night. And Mikey, what were your thoughts on it?
My thoughts on this were, if that Buck Wild tag team match didn't happen tonight, this would have been the match of the night, in my eyes.
Whoa, wow.
But that tag team match was bonkers, and we'll talk about that later. But in my eyes, this was definitely second on the list of the best matches. Because I think I will admit I am a little biased because Orange Cassidy, but I do think this match was everything it needed to be for both of them. I think it was everything mm-hmm. it needed to be for Cassidy to show off that he can actually go if he fucking needs to. And it shows, and it was good for Pac because Pac really sold the like the shock of it well, when Orange Cassidy started trying. Like mm-hmm. I think. Pac winning was the correct choice.
Yeah.
But I do think he definitely made Orange Cassidy look like a goddamn star. And Orange Cassidy made himself look like a goddamn star. And it just showed everybody what he could really, really do if he actually tried. And I'm glad we finally got the match where we got to see Orange Cassidy really try in AEW for the first time. It was great.
Yeah, this was a very solid match. I was saying online that this match, I felt that like could have been very similar if you've seen it before to the Orange Cassidy versus David Starr match.
Ryan, I've seen that match. Ryan, I've seen that match 3 times by now.
I'm talking to the listener,
oh,
my dude.
I was like, I thought you were talking to me, and I was like, of course I've seen that
so
match.
So egotistical. He's like, oh, you're talking to me. No, I thought it had a potential to be very similar to that match. And whereas I don't know if it necessarily lived up exactly to that match, and granted, I think, you know, that match helps because it's got, like, blood and stuff in it. Mm-hmm. This match, again, was very, very good, very, very solid. It, like you said, it was exactly what it needed to be. Pac coming out there, being the goddamn bastard that he is, you know, just trying to wreck Orange Cassidy's shop in, but Orange Cassidy getting those hope spots, getting those surprise, like, oh, he's trying, he's, oh my god, he's succeeding.
Oh my god, he's
Orange
doing
Cassidy,
stuff.
He's doing things. He's, it's like, it wasn't like the perfect Orange Cassidy match, you know, we're missing some, like, other, some key spot moves.
I don't know.
We're missing
that
orange juice.
I think we did have a lot of good comedy spots in that match, though, even though, like, Orange Cassidy did try. Like, one of my favorite parts is when every time Pac got on the top rope, Orange Cassidy just rolled to the other side.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
I think it's part, I think Orange Cassidy is, like, it's going to be weird to say. I think Orange Cassidy has left a lot more in the tank than he put out there, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I can see this match maybe happening again.
Which I would love.
It really going. It's just, I don't know. I can just see it happening and just really going for
OC
it.
OC versus Pac rematch tonight on Dynamite. Let's do it, baby.
My question would be, like, where do we go with Orange Cassidy? Like, you know, like, is he getting, like, a title shot event? I mean, he lost, so I guess not anytime soon, but... Like, who is Orange Cassidy going to defeat first?
I feel like we gotta have
another Pac match. I like the idea of Pac being this guy that's, like, obsessed with records and obsessed with, you know, having that triple match. You know, what's that? Having that trilogy, mm-hmm. like having that rubber match. I like the idea of them doing a run back of this match and Orange Cassidy getting the win and then Pac being like, I want a rematch, and it's like we get another Iron Man match.
I like the idea of Orange Cassidy being like a stain on Pac's record. Like, he's like, okay, like,
yeah.
you see like Kenny Omega on there, it's like, yeah, duh. You see Jon Moxley on there, it's like, yeah, okay, that makes sense. And then you see and then Orange Cassidy's on that defeat list, and it's gotta be killing him, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's why I can't wait. I think that's the potential of an Orange Cassidy character, is just the blemish on the record books,
uh-huh.
for lack of a better word. But I thought this match was great. I thought it was very solid semi-main. Like you said, it was like way more fun. It was great. It was great. Obviously, it wasn't my match of the night, but it ended up still being an amazing match.
For me, it was very close, I'll say that.
Yeah, I gave this 3 stars, 3 meatballs out of 5. Mikey, what did you give it?
I gave this one 4 meatballs out of 5. I thought it was very fun, very good. I was popping and I was laughing and I was very hyped that he tried, and I was just really into this one.
Were you popping and locking, or were you just popping?
A little bit of locking went on.
A tad bit of locking. Just a little bit. Just a smidgen of locking. Okay, well, let's go back up the card to the buy-in, Mikey, which of course was Dark Order, Evil Uno, and Stu Grayson taking on SCU, Frankie Kazarian, and Scorpio Sky. Of course, SCU ended up getting the victory. Oh wait, my mistake. Did I remember this correctly? Dark Order got the victory.
Good one, Ryan.
Over SCU.
You had 2 choices and you missed.
I barely remembered. 9 minutes and 25 seconds. After the match, of course, Dark Order got the beat down on SCU. Colt Cabana made the save, but eventually, I guess, didn't really make the save. He made sort of a save. Pop announced that he is signed.
Does Colt Cabana have... This is his third contract, right?
What do you mean?
Isn't he under contract with, like, 2 other promotions as well? Like... I thought he had...
No, his Ring of Honor's expired.
Okay.
That expired a couple, maybe like a month or two ago, maybe around the new year.
Mm-hmm.
And then he also works for NWA, which I don't know how much he's going to be doing, you know, moving forward. And then he works for New Japan as well, as a, but New Japan has like weird contract stuff.
The forbidden door has been opened.
New Japan has a situation where it's like, well, New Japan has a situation where like most of their roster are not signed to contracts.
Mm-hmm.
That's why like Lance Archer is being signed to AEW, is because he was never signed to New Japan. There's like wrestlers in New Japan like Sonata, who's like really high up there and one of their most popular guys. He's not signed to a contract.
Interesting.
WWE can sign him to a contract tomorrow.
Hmm.
And he just jumps ship immediately. So their very situation is different. But I would not be surprised if Colt Cabana is one of those guys that has, you know, New Japan door open clause or whatever.
Yeah, it seems like it. It seems like he can kind of... It feels like Colt Cabana could do whatever the fuck Colt Cabana wants.
It's also weird to think that if... I mean, just thinking about it, if the New Japan Cup did happen, and, it, you know, they didn't cancel half the card, pretty much the entire event,
mm-hmm.
because of the, you know, coronavirus worry in Japan, would he even have been at this show? And I'm thinking probably not, because he was scheduled to be in the New Japan Cup. I think he was actually in the first show. Which the first show, I believe, was March 1st. So he would not have been able to make this if he, that New Japan Cup did happen, I believe. So that's very fun to think about.
Interesting.
But of course, Colt Cabana, he got beat down by the Dark Order. And then the Exalted One appeared. Just kidding, it wasn't the Exalted One. It was Christopher Daniels. And he got the beat down.
Christopher Daniels
and
loves
SCU.
Getting in disguise, huh? He's like Chris Jericho.
Yes. Christopher Daniels walked so Chris Jericho can run, I
people
guess?
Name,
I don't know.
It's just something about people named Chris in disguises, man.
They love it. SCU stand tall. Mikey, thoughts on this tag match?
Oh, it was fine. It did what it needed to do. I don't think the hype was in the match, though. I think the more the hype came from possibly getting a reveal of the Exalted One. So I think that's kind of what brought everybody in. I like this feud, but it's not because I want to see these two guys fight. It's because I want to see, is Daniels going to turn on SCU? Is Daniels going to join Dark Order? Who's the Exalted One? Like, that's why I'm more interested in this feud. I knew the match was going to be just fine if it happened, and it was. I don't think it was anything absolutely like blow me out of the water, but it was good.
Yeah, I would agree with that. The idea that this match was going to be like a fine match, especially since it was on the buy-in.
Mm-hmm.
It was just going to be like a fine, okay match. But really, the question leading up to it was whether or not was the story surrounding
yeah.
it, whether or not, you know, Christopher Daniels is going to turn his back on SCU, whether or not the Exalted One's going to appear. You know, all of those sort of story beats were more important, were the more looming aspect to this match. It wasn't about, let's say, the other tag match, the tag title match, where it was like, that one had story, but we're also expecting an amazing
Yeah, that
match.
One was about the match as well. That one, everyone was like, I can't wait to see this match. It's going to be great. But everyone with this Dark Order storyline, I feel like there's more focus on the story instead of the matches, you know?
Yeah, I've had issue with, I mean, everyone's had issue with Dark Order in the past. I feel like we have, I used, like, Dark Order in the beginning, you know, back in, like, the Fight for the Fallen Fighter Fest, when they were just, like, sort of establishing and they were showing off the wrestling a lot, I was like, man, I'm behind this team. I thought they felt great. And then, obviously, with the whole story change, which made it fun, I felt that wrestling hasn't been as great. I feel like they've been like, okay, I don't know where I stand with Dark Order anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I right now it's just like right now I'm afraid that there's in a situation where it's like if they don't live up to the hype of who the Exalted One is, I'm afraid of like it will disappoint.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, who knows, because I basically trust AEW with my life at this point.
Yeah.
So I trust whatever they do is going to be good. But, you know, I'm just sort of like, man, I don't know what they're doing. I mean, we got Alex Reynolds and John Silver in that group, which they're also a great tag team, but, like, the whole point, like, okay, the whole point of Dark Order is, like, to be a loser.
Just to be
join
just
Dark
to
Order.
Become a winner. That's the idea, right?
Yeah, join Dark Order and become a winner. I have not seen. I think since joining Dark Order, Alex Reynolds and John Silver had had maybe one match, maybe two, and they've lost both of them.
I was about to say, can't lose if you don't get into matches.
That's true, but I was like, you gotta give, if you join, to me it's like, if you're a loser, and then continue to lose, then Why stay in Dark Order? If you join in Dark Order, then you need to go on this massive run. You know, if Brandon Cutler joins Dark Order, then he needs to dominate AEW Dark,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, he needs to start winning consistently.
Yeah. I think that it might be, they might be doing it on purpose, and that after the reveal of the Exalted One, I think Dark Order might get more powerful.
That might be true. Just, like, hold off the power, hold off the pushes
yeah.
until
and
the Exalted,
then the Exalted One shows up, and then the winning starts happening.
That's true. Yeah, I thought this match was good. Like you said, the story here is more about, like, who the Exalted One's going to be, all the hype surrounding it. Mikey, who is your pick? It's obviously not Christopher Daniels. It's not Colt Cabana. Unless any of these people could just be like, JK, and then join the Dark Order.
So, if we're talking about disappointing reveals, my pick is Rowan Spider.
Oh my god. Wow. What a pick. And he's got many eyes.
There you go. Spiders have a lot of eyes.
He's got a lot of eye gimmicks. Oh my god.
But for real, I don't think I have a real pick. I just think I know who I want it to be, and I think it's who they've been teasing the most, and that's Matt Hardy.
Yeah, Matt Hardy feels like the shoe-in. Mm-hmm. My outside pick is Brody Lee.
That could be cool.
Formerly known as Luke Harper. I think that would be awesome. He's got the whole eye gimmick shtick.
Mm-hmm.
And it's Wednesday. You know what that means? Time to get a bunch of losers to join the call.
It is Wednesday, my dudes. I'm not going to do this screen because that's audio hell.
Thank you. That's my eardrum hell as well. I gave this match a 2.75 out of 5 meatballs. Mikey, what'd you give?
I gave it a 2.5 out of 5 meatballs. I thought it was just fine.
Okay, moving right down the card, we have Jake Hager defeating Dustin Rhodes by submission. That submission hold, I forget what it is off the top of my brain, but I remember that it was the same submission hold that he used to win his matches in Bellator. Mm-hmm. So we got some nice cross-promotion kind of shoot-style
stuff.
This
is the second victory of the night where someone passed out due to a submission hold.
Oh, that is correct. That is correct.
Which is interesting. I like it. I like the idea that submissions aren't somebody tapping out. It's somebody just fucking passing out in the ring. And the ref has to be like, well, all right, I guess I can't fight anymore.
Yeah, it like protects the other guy.
Yeah, a little
right?
bit.
We're protecting Dustin Rhodes to a certain extent, I guess.
Yeah. He didn't give up.
No, it's so weird.
He just kind of, his body this, did.
This match was weird. For me,
it was fine.
It was like okay, Jake Hager trying to be like a dominating force, but it never really entirely clicked for me because it's also like Dustin Rhodes and he's old, so I guess like it's not impressive. I don't know. That's maybe a dunk on Dustin Rhodes, but it's like
I don't know how I felt about that spot where Dustin kissed Hager's wife. I thought that was fucking weird.
I was just about to say that. That was weird. I didn't like that. I was uncomfortable by
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I saw. I was not a fan of that.
This match never really clicked for me. That spot was weird. This match, especially opening the pay-per-view, I felt that this match was weird.
I think this match would have highly benefited if the two opening matches switched.
Yes, I would agree with that. It seemed like such a weird decision to have Dustin Rhodes and Jake Hager. I get it. Maybe it was like a heated rivalry of Dustin, you know, getting his arm broken by Jake Hager, and it was the debut of Jake Hager. Mm-hmm. This is a guy we're supposed to be putting over as this huge monster, which is why he got the win. But it was just weird. I don't know. Jake Hager was never that most impressive guy in WWE. And, you know, now he's here and he's like, okay,
and he still wasn't very impressive.
Yeah, he still was very impressive.
My brain was just like, it's going to be Jack Swagger, but with a little more MMA.
Yeah, and that's what it was. You know, I don't know what... It just nothing very clicked here. You know, I don't know where... You know, we keep Jake... I like Jake Hager more as just the silent, brooding bodyguard type. I don't necessarily want to see him wrestle. I don't think he necessarily needs to wrestle. But, you know, let's give him a match, I guess, that opens a pay-per-view where my opponent kisses my wife.
Yeah, that was definitely weird. Also the fact that he kept kissing his wife was also weird. The whole inclusion of his wife was just weird in this match.
Yeah, that was definitely like someone. I want to know who pitched the wife.
Never have your family ringside. It's always bad luck.
I don't think Tony or any of the EVPs pitched it. I think it was like either Jake Hager or Dustin Rhodes were pitching these wife
spots.
Yeah,
it seemed weird. I wasn't into it.
And I was just like, this feels like this is for a different demographic than I am a part of. I don't know. It was a weird start to a pay-per-view. I didn't really like this match. I thought it was way too long. You know, what was it? The match was like 15 minutes?
Yeah.
14:40. Cut out. Wait, am I right? Is that right? 14:40? Yeah, 14:40. Cut out 5 minutes. We don't need that. Get that shit out of here. Put it into Darby Sammy or something. Put it into, I don't know, give me more tag match maybe? I don't know. It was perfectly fine the way it was. But I was just move that time somewhere else. I don't need it in this match. Like I said, I thought the match was, it wasn't awful, in my opinion. It was just like, what?
Yeah.
I give this 2.5 out of 5, Mikey.
I give this one 2 out of 5. It was awkward. It felt a little weird. I wasn't really into it. Yeah, it was definitely not my pick for what should have been the opener.
Yeah. Well, let's keep the ball rolling and move on to Darby Allin versus Sammy Guevara. The match itself was only 5 minutes, but of course, there was a huge brawl in the beginning of the match. Yeah, the match itself was only 5 minutes. There was a huge brawl that lasted like the first 5-10 minutes, which was, you know, Darby suicide diving through the ring multiple times.
I guess
times.
That's why it felt a little longer.
Sammy doing an insane top rope 630 to put Darby.
It's because he's crazy.
He's crazy. He's vlogger crazy. Crazy. That was a great match.
That was a great match. You know,
I guess the match itself was like 5 minutes, and it was like, okay, yeah, sure. But like the whole segment was, I thought, great. I thought, like we talked about, this should have been the opener. Darby is a huge star.
Yeah, did you hear that pop for Darby's coffin drop? That was nuts.
He's an amazing... He's one of their biggest stars.
He's so over.
And all the more reason that... I'll definitely get to it later. All the more reason is that I think now is the perfect time to establish a mid-card title and get it on somebody. I don't think it's going to be Darby you put it on, but get it on somebody to really hold it.
Honestly, if we're talking who would be perfect for a mid-card title, Sammy.
I'll get to my pitch about a mid-card title later. But Sammy would be a great pick. Sammy would be an amazing pick to put on a mid-card title. I think, you know, just make him even more of an asshole, really.
Make the Spanish god even more a little godly, you know?
Yeah, Spanish gold.
Spanish gold. I like that.
There's something there. Yeah, I thought this was great. I thought this segment was amazing. I talk about the segment more than the match. That 630, top rope 630 through a table.
That was nutty.
Was killer. Sammy was working this match with like an injured ankle as well.
Somewhere, a tear like drips down the cheek of Ricochet.
Well, we can't see the tear because it's underneath a bunch of gravel. Being buried. Hashtag buried Twitter. Like that Twitter hashtag buried.
Yikes.
I actually disagree. I don't think he's been being buried at all. I disagree 100%. I'm like the only person that feels that way, apparently.
I do think Ricochet needs a redemption arc, though.
I think he's getting it. I think people should let the story be played out. Yet he got a title match against Brock Lesnar because he kicked him in the balls and then won a triple threat against, what was it, Styles and Bobby Lashley. And then he loses it, of course. He wasn't going to win it. And then he... And then he has a weird match and loses a 24/7 title match. I think the point is that it's like he's not being buried. He's just lost a match. Settle down, folks. Anyways, I thought this match was great. Darby and Sammy Guevara, I thought it was really, really good. I gave it a 3.25 meatball out of 5.
I gave it 3.75 out of 5. Ooh. I thought it was very good. I enjoyed it a lot. It was quick, but they both absolutely just destroyed. They destroyed each other for this match, and Darby Allin almost destroyed himself as usual. Did you see that suicide dive where Sammy was draped over the barricade?
Oh my god! He like missed it.
Darby
missed
almost
it
broke
completely.
His neck. He fucking completely missed it.
Oh my god! Darby Allin is his 2020.
That was the epitome of I don't think he got all of it.
Darby Allin's 2020 is set to be probably the most prolific of his career.
Yeah.
Prolific, maybe that's not the word, but either way, he's set to have an amazing year already. I mean, you know, he's built this amazing star power, star quality in 2019, and now it's like we're really cashing it in.
In 2019, he's already had one AEW title match.
That's true. That's true. And he was very close to winning it.
Yeah.
I think you got to, of all your mid-carders, Darby Allin is the man. Sadly, I think the issue with Darby, though, is like he's amazing at losing. So it's like the tendency to be like, well, Darby loses. It's like, when does he win? When does he get that shot? When does he get that title?
Well, he won at Revolution.
That is true. He did win this match. He gets like the wins every once in a while. He loses. He loses all the time, but then he gets a win. It's like, yes.
I'm very excited to see. So we're recording this on a Wednesday, which means tonight is Darby Allin and Jon Moxley versus Sammy and Chris Jericho, which I think will be a banger of a match.
Oh, yeah. 100%. 100%. I'm very much excited for that match. There's father and son against father and son.
Father and son against father and son.
Let's keep moving down the card. Next up is the tag match of the AEW World Tag Team Championship. Kenny Omega and Adam Page retaining and defeating the Young Bucks in 30 minutes and 56 seconds. Mikey, thoughts on this match?
This match melted my brain. It was an absolute barn burner, and these two teams just destroyed each other, and it was amazing. I kind of got spoiled with WWE because I could always pick the finishing spot. I couldn't do it this time. Every spot felt like the finishing spot, but then somebody would kick out and the match would keep going, and I don't know how. And it was fucking wild. This match was absolutely buck wild in every sense of the word. It was some fucking real cowboy shit, and I was into it 100%.
This match was amazing. Top down.
It was so good.
It was so good. You know, the Adam Page came off like an absolute beast here. Adam Page is like the person I think of, but Kenny Omega looked amazing, even with the hurt shoulder. Matt and Nick Jackson put on a great clinic. Nick Jackson getting pushed off the top rope, doing the backflip and coming back in to do a Canadian Destroyer was amazing. Adam Page doing his over the top rope Hurricane Rana or his moonsault off the top rope, powerbombing Nick eventually through the table. Matt, you know, the story of Matt's shoulder versus Kenny's shoulder versus Matt's back.
Mm-hmm.
That whole quandary. Sort of Matt Jackson going a little nutso butso and going after Kenny really hard.
Yeah, I like that aspect of the match where Nick was like, "Hey, you need to chill out."
Yeah, the Young Bucks are amazing heels. We haven't seen them play heels since like their PWG independent wrestling days, like since 2015.
I actually just watched the match with it was for Indy 500 where it was them and it was Candice LeRae and Joey Ryan, and that match they were vicious heels.
That's an
vicious
amazing heels. Match. Oh my god, I can't believe you watched that match. How did
yeah, dude, that match was nuts.
That is that
just
the,
like this
the,
one, just like it, this one.
Was that the warfare match, the guerrilla warfare match?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's the one. That's the one that made that. That's like Candice's like match of her career, honestly.
Yeah, that was nuts. So anyway, good. back to this match.
But this match was amazing. You know, I everyone expected, and everyone with the WWE brain rot expected that there was going to be a story bit here with, you know, Adam Page attacking Omega, turning heel or whatever. But
can we talk about after the match that shot of Hangman just looking completely 100% ready for the buckshot with Kenny's back turned, and we're like, oh my god, he's gonna fucking do it. He's gonna do it.
There
and
was,
he didn't.
There was that shot which heavily teased it, but you forget that there is another shot where Adam Page had his, you know, he was hanging on the ropes, Adam Page was hanging, and right before he turned around, Kenny, Matt, and Nick both
all were,
their,
all, yeah, 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 they're all, like they're gonna super kick him.
Yeah, they're all set up ready to super kick the crap out of him. And I was like, and I like seeing that, I was like, oh shit, I didn't even think about like them turning heel on Page.
Yeah, I
we're
never
all thinking Page turned heel on them. No, what if they turned heel on him?
So two options. I thought it was gonna be Page turns heel on them, or it was gonna be the Bucks turning heel on Kenny and Page. I never thought about Kenny turning with the Bucks against Page.
Yeah. I think that's the story. I think that's the way better story. No one leaves the Elite. The Elite is for life. The you know, the Bullet Club is for life or whatever it was. No one left the Bullet Club. They always got literally kicked out by the Young Bucks.
And that would have been it.
That no
was
one
almost le- it. Like
that was almost it. I think that's what you do. Honestly, I think that's where it's going to go. And the best part is, Mikey, is that this isn't the end of the story. There is easily another match here somewhere. Probably on TV, maybe. Maybe on the next pay-per-view. But the next pay-per-view, again, is not going to happen for months. Let me see. Do we have the date for Double or Nothing? Yes, we do. May 23rd. So we got plenty of time.
Can we talk about
there?
Can we talk about real quick when Paige hit the one winged angel?
Oh my god, that was a great spot. Can we talk about Adam Page doing the cheeky kick into the little chicken wing spin and doing the actual chicken wing? That was great.
That
shout
got
out
everyone.
To Marty
that Skrull. That got a little pop. That was great.
Talk about the Young Bucks doing a cheeky Nandas kick into a Motor City Machine Guns.
I love the cheeky Nando's kick because now I get it.
Yes, because now you are a fan of Will Ospreay and understand everything about him. Oh my God.
They did it because I was watching it with my friend who came over, and they did the cheeky Nando's kick, and I was like, oh my god, they did the kick, and my friend was like, what's that? And I was like, hold on,
Will Ospreay, he's a guy. Now you understand what it's like to have like the independent wrestling mindset. That's the best part about Mikey's Indy 500, folks, is Mikey like learning what an independent mindset is like. So it's like he's legit learning like Cheeky Nando's. I know that reference.
Yeah, I called that. I was like, oh my god, they just did a Cheeky Nando's kick. My friend's like, the what now?
Oh my god. This match was amazing. Kenny Omega, Adam Page, Young Bucks. I cannot wait for the sequel. I would not be surprised if we get a sequel. I just don't know when it's going to happen, folks. Maybe on TV eventually. I don't know. I don't know when it's going to happen, but I'm 100% excited for it. Mikey, what was your rating for this one?
It's got to be 5 meatballs, right?
I'm in agreement. I rarely give out 5 meatballs. You know how rarely I give it out.
This match was nuts.
This was... I have my document open here. Let me check. This was, of the year 2020, my 4th 5-star match that I've seen.
What were the other 3? As a quick refresher.
And I've seen 161 matches so far this year.
Damn.
And that I've given out 4. One of them was the Men's Royal Rumble from WWE.
Really?
Okay. Yeah, I thought that was perfect. Then you got... oh, wait, that's incorrect. That needs to say... Night 2. Then it was the Kazuchika Okada versus Tetsuya Naito, Wrestle Kingdom Night 2 for the IWGP Heavyweight and Intercontinental title match. And the Night 1 match of Okada versus Ibushi for the Heavyweight title as well.
Nice.
Yeah, those were... I both gave both of those matches 5 stars as well. That just... Oh, man. It's like I've seen 161 matches and I have 4 5-star matches. You know how rare that is. What is that? 4 divided by 161? I can't even do the math. That is point... Literally, Mikey, 2% of the matches I've seen are 5 stars.
I'm a little... Honestly, I'm a little more generous with 5 meatballs than you are.
Oh, yeah.
Because I think that you're much more of an analytical person than I am, and you'll, like, analyze matches to, like, a crazy degree.
But I look at it, like, with the intellectual mindset of, like...
Yeah.
What is this?
Me, I'm just like, wow, this match, like, melted my brain, and I loved it.
I've been thinking about it, Mikey. You're, like, the embodiment of the excitrometer.
Yes.
You are that. You are that person.
Yeah.
But yes, this match was amazing. I gave it a 5-star match. I thought this was the best tag match in all wrestling history.
Yep.
Obviously a short history, but there's been a lot of good ones. The one I saw in Atlanta was amazing. I gave that one 4 3/4 meatball.
Mm-hmm.
This was just a teensy bit better. I thought the story was obviously there.
Oh, we never even talked about how the Bucks hit the golden trigger.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. I forgot. There's so many story bits in here. Hit the golden trigger almost for the win, too.
Yeah.
Just so much story. So much story. So much backlog. I'm surprised they didn't do an Adam Cole reference.
Yeah, right?
Now that I'm thinking about it. I guess super kicks? That doesn't count. They did a Panama Surprise. Panama Sunrise. I'd be like, there you go. There it is. God, this match was so good. This match, the best match. According to my personal preference, best tag match ever, best match since the Cody Dustin Rhodes match.
I agree. This match was absolutely insane and buck wild, and I loved it.
So good. Let's keep moving down the card for the AEW Women's World Championship, which was Nyla Rose defending and retaining her title against Chris Statlander in 12 minutes. Mikey, thoughts?
This match was good. I liked it. They both put on kind of a show. There was a couple of spots that they almost botched, but ended up making look okay in the end. But, like, I thought it was good. And I know Chris Statlander was working sick, so that was, like, a little bit of, like, a leeway for me on that.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought it was fine. I kind of figured Nyla Rose was going to win. This was one of those matches where I kind of, like, was able to predict the ending a little bit. Where I was just like, yeah, Nyla Rose wins, can retain her title. There's no way she's going to lose it already. So, yeah, it was fine.
Yeah, I almost feel bad for Chris Statlander because it's like whenever she gets an opportunity, it's always... Whenever she gets an opportunity in All Elite Wrestling, it's always like distracted by something shitty, whether it's being sick, whether it's not being able to make the show because of a prior engagement with another wrestling company, whether it's, you know... The Nightmare Collective, whether it's that nonsense. Chris Statlander has so much bad luck in All Elite Wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
Despite she's getting great opportunities, but she's never like being able to really capitalize on because she's distracted by something nonsensical. Nyla, like you said, this match had a 2-week build of all the matches. Very disappointed in the setup for this match. The match itself was good. Gave it 3 meatballs. Nyla Rose was easily going to win.
Yeah.
I was never expecting... I think that's part of the problem is that, like, because there was so little build or anything, I didn't even think... Like, I totally forgot that Chris was, like, sick for this match, which is, like, an excuse to be like, oh, well, she was sick. That's why she lost. She can have another title shot or whatever, you know, storyline-wise. But, like, it didn't even occur to me that I was like, oh, yeah, she was going to win. You know, like, Nyla Rose is going to win here. I don't expect anything other than that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I gave this match 2.5 meatballs out of 5. It was fine.
This match sort of disappointing, I guess. I don't know. I don't know. I just, you know,
it's just there was a lot of spots that almost got botched that kind of took away from me because I kind of got worried.
This match was sort of indicative of the women's division.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's just sort of like last minute, sort of an afterthought.
They need to do better. They need
the
to do better.
Though, even the placement on the card, it was placed after the best match on the of the night.
Yeah, that was
rough. Did we know that that was probably going to be the best match of the night? You know, maybe if you're booking the show, if you're Kenny Omega and you're the guy that runs the women's division and know what your match is going to be.
And you have a match with a group literally called The Elite, I think we would have known that match is going to be pretty good.
Yeah, maybe that match is going to be your match of the night. Maybe don't put Rose and Chris in that spot to follow. Like, that just, it's the only women's match on the card, and they're after the best match. That's a hard spot to follow. And granted, it's the worst built match on this card with a 2-week build, but like, I don't, like, even, but even then, it's like, why did this match get a 2-week build? I get, why wasn't this, this should have been Nyla Rose versus Riho. I think for the third match in their trilogy, this should have just been like the reback. And then it'd be like, and then it'd be like have a little bit more stakes than a Chris Statlander. You know, maybe you couldn't get Riho for whatever reason, but in my opinion, this should have been a way different match. This should have been Nyla Rose versus Riho. Nyla Rose wins again, and we're like, okay, cool, off to the races with someone new. And then we could build to Chris Statlander. Now we burned this match, yeah, Chris felt, lost, and now rushed. She's not going to have a title shot for another while.
It definitely felt rushed. I don't know. I wasn't into it.
It's indicative of the women's division. They feel like an afterthought. They
need
feel
to
like
do better.
They need to do better. I'm upset by it. I think, you know,
It's like, how are you ever going to sign more women if this is how you're going to run your women's division?
I think the problem with the women's division is honestly the fact that, like, a lot of the women need to get reps in. There's not a lot of, you know, a lot of these women don't have a lot of experience wrestling. I mean, Chris Statlander's been wrestling for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
None of these women have any TV experience. It's a very, very young division. So until those women are ready to go, you kind of have to wait. Like, you have to wait for these women to get better.
I also think I was listening to another podcast, Tights and Fights, and they brought up a good point that there's no significant women's voice in the booking room. Like,
that's almost definitely true.
Like, they need Brandy has her own job in the company. Like, she's not booking. Like, so it's like, who is it? It's like Cody, the Bucks, Kenny, and Tony Khan, right? Like, they need a significant women's voice just to, like, get better ideas, because clearly they're not doing it.
As to my understanding, Kenny is the guy that's running the women's division. He's the one that's, like, most in charge out of everyone, any of the EVPs or anything.
Mm-hmm.
I believe, again, these are all based on reports and rumors and whatnot, but I believe that Brandy initially ran the women's division, like, did a lot of the initial hirings and stuff, and then Kenny was brought on and he handled the rest of the women's division.
But, I am not saying this out of a place of hate. I love Kenny Omega, but he's still just a white dude.
From Canada.
He's still...
It's different, dude, because he's from Canada.
The thing is, he's still a white dude running a women's division. Like, we need...
That's true.
I think we need a woman in charge of the women's division to, like, really start putting it over the top here. They need a significant woman's voice in that booking room.
You know who I would love to have in that booking
Again,
room?
Again, coming from two white dudes.
Yes, coming from two white dudes. We understand the irony of this.
Yeah.
But you know who I would love in the room?
Who?
Awesome Kong.
I agree.
Awesome Kong would be, she has tons of experience. She obviously has the women's perspective, but she just would be great. She would be the perfect voice, I think, to have in there. Kenny and Awesome Kong running it, I think would be great. Mm-hmm. Awesome Kong can still stay and wrestle as a heel every once in a while, but I think she would be the perfect person.
I agree.
To have in that, help run that division. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I think the... I hate the dog on Kenny, but I think Kenny has bad ideas.
Yeah.
I guess maybe a hot take, but Kenny is an amazing wrestler, and he's always good at like what he needs to do when he wrestles. But whenever I've seen Kenny Omega outside of wrestling or doing something else, like, or knowing the fact that he, like, this was his idea or doing something that's his idea, I've always not liked it.
Yeah.
I've always been like, that was kind of silly or stupid, or I don't know why he did that. I just think Kenny Omega has bad ideas. I don't know whose idea was the Nightmare Collective, but according to Brandy, it wasn't hers. I don't know. I think Kenny's just got bad ideas, and I don't know what's happening. Because it's like, maybe it's the fact that I don't watch enough Joshi, so I don't understand how Joshi booking works,
mm-hmm.
right? And you know, Kenny's a big fan of that mindset, so he's doing that maybe more. Again, another reason to bring in Awesome Kong. But like, it's just like these matches feel thrown together at the last minute. They feel like afterthought. And the problem is, you got a young division. You got a person that's never booked before.
Mm-hmm.
With my opinion, not great ideas. You know, got a woman in the locker room helping. You know, I guess maybe Brandy's maybe throwing in some ideas, but. And I imagine some of these other, the women themselves are coming up with ideas as well, of course.
Yeah.
But no, like, woman in charge or anything. I don't know. I don't know. I understand the irony that this is two white guys talking about this, but it's just, you know, I think there's more potential here. I think we're riding the ship, but I think we're just not there yet.
I think another one of the issues is that they're too concerned with bringing in people who are already fans of wrestling over, rather than like they're too concerned with converting people rather than roping in new fans.
What do you mean?
But
I mean AEW or like the women's division?
No, AEW in general. I think they could benefit by trying to appeal. Like I think their women's division can improve if they try to appeal to a new audience rather than appeal to the same audience that has already been around from WWE that they're just trying to rope in with, like, a lot of the stuff they've been doing. Like, you know what I mean? It's hard to explain.
I don't know. I mean, if you look at like the numbers and stuff, it's like the TV rating numbers and stuff, it's like it's apparent that they are bringing in a lot of new people, a lot of like old people that haven't watched wrestling since like WCW and stuff,
mm-hmm.
and who have just dropped off. So they are bringing in a lot of people. I just don't know how much of those people are like being brought in because of the women's division.
Is it bringing in new people, or is it just moving the same people around? Like,
based on
like it's like Monday I'll watch this, and Wednesday I'll watch Dynamite. Like, it's like, is it the same fans just moving around?
According, when like the DVR stuff and all that stuff came apart, Dave Meltzer reported that it looked like that AEW Dynamite is its own fan base. And like during commercials and whatnot, those people would switch and watch NXT. But the people that were watching NXT live weren't switching to Dynamite.
Interesting.
If that makes sense. So it's like, maybe you are right in saying that like they're taking people from WWE or / taking people that are their own. You know, obviously not all of those people are switching to NXT, but they're, you know, they're building up their own audience or taking people from WWE. Whereas WWE is just like, people are like, well, I'm watching WWE. That's what I watch.
It just feels like a lot of what they do is pandering to guys our age, and that's it.
I mean, hey, that it's bringing in the huge numbers in that demo.
Yeah.
And they're destroying everyone else in that demo.
That's what I'm saying. They need new people. Like they need to appeal to other people besides us, because we're already in.
The past couple of weeks, they've been winning all of the demos, not just 18 to 40 or whatever. They've been getting 50 plus. They actually beat NXT for like the first couple times getting 50 plus. I think they are doing it. I just don't know the ratings as much as I should, I guess.
Anyway, let's move on.
Yes, let's move on. Let's move on to MJF defeating Cody in their first singles match outing together in a 24-minute match. Oh my god, this match... Didn't realize that match went on that long. MJF defeated Cody. Mikey, thoughts on this match?
It was a little bit disappointing.
I would agree. We're at the disappointing section of our card, apparently.
I was whelmed.
I was underwhelmed. Why were you whelmed?
It was fine. Like I expected to, because I was disappointed because I expected to be overwhelmed and that the match would be good, but coming out of it, I was like, huh, that was fine, I guess. Like I kind of figured this story would blow off here and Cody would just win and move on, but I guess they're trying to get more out of it.
Yeah. I think that's what hurt it, is that the build to this match
made it feel like this should have been the finale.
Yeah, right? It everything felt like this was the
it.
Match.
Yeah, right?
And that we forget that this is a professional wrestling promotion and they're in the business to make money and build to the next thing, that we forget that since this is the first match, we're probably going to get two more after this. You know?
Yeah.
So it's like, we forget that, like, oh, this match...
I don't know. I think I'd be more okay with, like, build to one pay-per-view, let that pay-per-view be the blow-off, and then start building more feuds. I don't know. I get what they're trying to do, though.
Yeah. It's that the old school thing of, like, let's get to the next thing. And I thought this match was good, you know. I just thought it was underwhelming, like we said. Like, the build was just so great, so good. The steel cage match, the lashings, the... just not being able to touch MJF, that going up to here, and it just, and the problem I think maybe lies in the fact that MJF isn't like a worker.
Mm-hmm.
MJF is a heat seeker. He's a guy that, like, he's gonna start the match by rolling outside the ring to slow down the match, slow down the pace of the match, not make it a we're death defying trying to battle each other.
Mm-hmm. I think that's why I got disappointed, is that with all this build, I thought this was going to be more of a brawl, and it was just, like, not.
I'm thinking about it now, and it's like, maybe we were just incorrect in thinking.
Don't think, just watch wrestle.
No, but, like, I'm thinking about it, and it's like, well, the build was built up this way, but, like, we forget that part of the build was MJF didn't want this match. MJF doesn't want to wrestle Cody. Cody wants to wrestle MJF. Cody's the one that wants to go out there and tear his face off. MJF is the guy that's like, I don't want this match. I'm going to give you all of these obstacles to make it incredibly difficult for you to have this match. I don't want to do it. So when the match starts, he's like, I'm going to roll outside. I don't want this. I don't even want to do this match. I don't want to stoop to your level or whatever. Because I'm better than you. Yeah. I'm writing promos over here. Like, we forget that, like, the match is built, the match for the MJF character is built around the fact that I don't want to wrestle. And the problem is, it's like, we as the audience are siding with Cody, where we want to see Cody go out there and rip his face off.
Yeah.
And then, like, wear it and then be MJF. like that, and I think... does that get heat on MJF? Do you feel more angry at MJF because of this and eventually getting the victory and how he won it? I think it's designed that way. It's obviously the very Southern-style built match. It's designed that way. But I think as, like, the new worker kind of fans that you and I are, we're sort of like,
I do think, I will say I do think the ending of this match was good, where it was, like, Cody getting too greedy and wanting to just beat the snot out of MJF, and he got a little carried away.
Yeah.
I thought that was good. That was a good way to end it. I don't think MJF sold that. We watching it on TV, we got the whole thing of he had the ring on and he punched Cody in the face. I don't think they sold that to the live crowd enough.
I didn't even notice it on TV until they played the replay.
It also took me a second, but like I kind of just ended up being like, oh, he probably had the ring on or something, because they were building it earlier. Mm-hmm. Like when Cody like threw it out of the ring, or when Cody had it for a second, they were building the fact that they were going to use the ring at some point.
Yeah, Chekhov's.
Yeah,
ring.
But I don't think they sold that last final shot to the audience enough, because there was no reaction when he did it.
It was sort of like, but I think it was because it was sort of this thing of like protecting Cody, in the sense that it's like, it's a ring shot. You have to go to the pin right now.
Mm-hmm.
You don't wallow in it.
Yeah.
And be smug, because if he's being smug and then he gets the pin and it is a 1-2-3, then Cody looks real rough.
Yeah.
It's a whole thing. It's the whole thing that's compounding in on itself. Mm-hmm. I'm excited for it moving forward, right? Because this obviously, like we said, this isn't the end of this feud. This chapter isn't over.
Yeah.
I don't know where this is going, because I don't think... Is this the next pay-per-view? Is this the next two pay-per-view? Are we doing this match at Double or Nothing? I don't know, right? I mean...
Is there going to be more stipulations for Cody to have another match? Like,
oh, that's true. I think the build... Thinking about it, it's like, it sort of feels like we need to get to a point where MJF wants to have the match really bad.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, Cody obviously wants to have the match, and now Cody wants his revenge. But MJF is like, I'm better than you. I don't want to stoop to your level.
Yeah,
I don't want to wrestle you because I'm better than
now
you.
Now I think...
How do we get to a point where MJF wants to fight him?
Yeah, because now I think he's going to want to fight him, like, less than ever. Because he's like, I already beat you. Why do I need to fight you again? You already lost. You're already
exactly.
Lost there, Coaster.
Now we have to book ourselves out of this.
Mm-hmm.
It's a tough one. It's a tough spot to be in. I gave this 3.25 meatballs. Mikey, what'd you give it?
I gave this one 3. Just straight up 3. It was fine.
Real quickly as well, what would you give MJF's attire in this match? Remember that weird-ass robe that he walked in with?
I missed the scarf. I'll say that.
Yes. Thank you. We'll get to the other fashion
it's
choice,
like,
I guess you could
it's
say.
It's like Ric Flair not coming in with his robe, or
the scarf is so much better.
Exactly. I think
scarf
the scarf
is
so
much
more
better.
Iconic for MJF, and it fits him so much better than that weird robe that had like the scarf pattern on it.
I almost would have preferred if he did the Tetsuya Naito bit where he came out in a full suit. And then before the match starts, we have to wait as MJF undoes the suit.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's just eating more time. I would have preferred that over this weird, shitty, ugly-looking, weird bathrobe where it's got the blueberry pattern, but like it doesn't really match. Whatever. Blueberry.
Burberry.
Whatever the fuck. I don't give a shit. He's better than me, so I don't care. talking about the other fashion choice, I thought that no one talks about the MJF one. The MJF one was stupid and ugly, and I hated it. But let's talk about the other one that the internet's all talking about, Mikey. Thoughts, meatball rating to
Cody's
that,
neck tattoo?
That tattoo. The American Nightmare tattoo across Cody's neck.
I don't want to rip on him too much for it, because it's not really our place to do so. It's his body, his choice, right?
But
I do think, okay, here's what I think. The tattoo itself, really nice. I think it's a nice tattoo. I think it's 100% Cody Rhodes, right? placement not as good.
Oh my god, that's... It is 100... It screams Cody.
The placement is not as good. I think on his neck is weird. I think that tattoo would have looked better on his arm, on his forearm, on the back of his leg, like, just...
On his hand, so we can do his, like, the AJ Styles
On his
thing.
Chest, even. Like, on the other side where it says Dream, on, or whatever it says on his chest, you know, he has that one little one. Yeah. Put it on the other side where it just, like, it would have looked really good there, like, on his other pec. The neck, I don't know why he decided this fucking neck, though.
His decision to make the tattoo visible constantly is like, oh, this is my brand, and I want to be, like, always, this is me being all in on my brand. And it's like, that's respectable, but it's like a ginormous tattoo on your neck, bro. Put it on your wrist. You know, put it somewhere else. It just...
Anywhere else it would have looked better.
Mikey, can I be honest in this part?
Yeah.
The real issue with the tattoo is that, and this may be a hot take, is that the American Nightmare logo is awful.
You think
I
so?
I hate that logo. I think the American Nightmare logo looks so bad. And I think it's good enough to put on, like, a t-shirt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like a wrestling t-shirt, but as a tattoo, it's like, this looks stupid.
I'm still in the camp that it would have looked fine anywhere else. It's just the fact that it's on his neck makes it weird.
I'm in the camp that if it was a better logo, I might have been fine with it.
Fair enough.
But it's just ridiculous. It's so stupid. Come on, Cody. Do better. You're the ace of the promotion. Don't get a tattoo.
It's too late now.
Way too late now. All right, let's keep moving along. We already talked about the semi-main of Pac and Orange Cassidy. Let's talk about the main event, the AEW World Championship, where Jon Moxley wins the title by defeating Chris Jericho in 22 minutes and 20 seconds. Mikey, thoughts on this barn burner?
Ryan, history has been made. We have crowned the youngest AEW World Champion.
Officially. Yet again.
Officially the youngest AEW World Heavyweight Champion.
I can't wait for Darby to win the title eventually. Oh my god. Jon Moxley defeated Chris Jericho. The official youngest champion. The lightest champion.
The champion with the least amount of hair.
Yes. The champion with an okay theme song. Jon Moxley has won the AEW World Championship. Mikey, thoughts on this match and thoughts on Jon Moxley becoming the new AEW World Champion?
So, before we get to the match, I want to talk about Chris Jericho's entrance.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That choir was like... that choir was absolutely fucking amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I got goosebumps. Like, I got goosebumps. It was so good. It made Cody's entrance look like garbage comparatively, even though, like, it made it look like even more trash because apparently Downstat is one of those bands that's only good in the studio.
Mm-hmm.
Because that was rough. It was rough. But Jericho's entrance fucking ruled. The choir singing was awesome, and then his theme song played, and the crowd sang. It was great. Also, those fucking LED bracelets. I want to shout out to those real quick in the audience. Those were fucking awesome.
Yes. Those are really nice. Those are really nice little bracelets to put in there.
Anyway, back to the match. This match was awesome. I loved it. They put on these two really put on a good show. I like the fact that Moxley had to still contend with the entirety of fucking Inner Circle. Mm-hmm. And I will never get tired of watching wrestlers react to being thrown out from ringside. Because it's always so good. They always oversell it so hard and it's so funny. And Aubrey...
Plus the referees,
Aubrey put her all into that one. She did a little spin. She was loading up for like 10 minutes. And then she like threw him out. The crowd popped. Fucking Santana, corpse. He was just like, duh! It was so good.
It's so funny. A genuine pop every time. No, it's so good.
And then while she was throwing them out, Sammy Guevara sneaking in with the belt. Genius.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Inner Circle, always ready. Always have a backup plan. I thought it was a great match. Yeah, right, it was set up perfectly. It encompassed the match itself encompassed the build of the match. The story of Moxley having to go through all of the Inner Circle, go through all of these steps, and then doing it basically all again in
the match.
You
know what it felt like? It felt like Gargano versus Adam Cole for the NXT Championship. Where he had to fight
which one?
The one where he initially won the title, where he had to fight off all of the Undisputed Era. Where they kept coming out and he kicked out of everything and he had to fight off Fish, he had to fight off O'Reilly, he had to fight off Strong, and he still had to fight Cole. It felt like that, and it was really cool. And I will never not be hyped for the loner fighting off the whole team by himself, you know? But it was really good.
It was really good. I really enjoy this match. The question is where do we go next, right? You know, who's the next challenger for Moxley? Where is Chris Jericho go next? Do you have any ideas?
I think we're going to get another match between Jericho and Moxley.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
I don't think that Jericho's going to take this loss lightly, I think Jericho's going to go right back after Moxley. And I think we're going to get... Okay.
This version of Chris Jericho has proved to be a whiny baby when he loses. I cannot wait for him to be a whiny baby when it comes to losing the title.
Here's what I'm thinking. And this might just be me hoping. But I think that Inner Circle is going to make John Moxley's life hell. And Moxley, as much as he wants to be a lone wolf, as much as he said he wants to be by himself, is going to need to get some help. And I think it might be building up to Blood and Guts.
Renee Young.
I think it might be building up to the little match that a certain someone likes to call War Games!
You can't say it. You can't say it in regards to AEW. We're gonna get sued.
But I think it might be building up to this.
Can we just say, Mikey, you're going to be in attendance for that match?
Okay. So we were watching Revolution, and me and my friend, who are both it was me and my friend who was coming over, who was going to that show with me. We saw that little promo pop up. It was like March 25th. I was like, oh, wasn't that the day they're in the Prudential Center? It was like Prudential Center, New Jersey. I was like, okay, cool. They're just building up like what shows are coming next. And then it said two rings. We were like, wait, what? It was like one cage. Me and my friend just started screaming. we absolutely popped off. We like went nuts. We were like, oh my god, we're getting War Games.
Hold on, you have to say it again, but as really...
We're getting War Games!
Yes, perfect. I can't wait to edit all of
that
audio.
I'm so sorry.
I'm so jealous. I guess I shouldn't be jealous, because I got the steel cage.
We're both getting big ones. We're both getting big ones, which is nice.
But I think you're right. I like that build of like going up. You know, everyone thought that it would be Inner Circle versus Elite, but I like the idea of Moxley begrudgingly having to find people.
I think after what happened at Revolution, I think Inner Circle versus Elite is kind of like not anymore because of the problems the Elite is having with themselves.
Yeah, I mean, we could still do it, but I think you're right. It would be a better idea to do Moxley.
Building up a team.
Now, I'll ask this question. Who's that team?
Darby Allin.
Three people to join John Moxley. Darby Allin.
Easily Darby Allin is one of them. I don't know. That's the fun part, right? We don't know.
Jungle Boy, Scorpio Sky.
I like Jungle Boy. I like because they were having their own problems with Inner Circle for a while.
The three people that Chris Jericho faced in those individual things, Darby Allin, Scorpio Sky, and Jungle Boy teaming up with John Moxley.
That could be cool.
That would you know, line up perfectly. I think it'd be weird to have Scorpio Sky in the match.
Yeah, that's one thing I was thinking, that it might be weird to have Scorpio Sky. But I think it could be also cool to have Scorpio. I think it could also be interesting to have Scorpio Sky on a team that's not SCU.
Yes. Yeah, I think that'd be a great match. And everyone has issues with Inner Circle. Darby Allin's the easy option.
I think he absolutely is. Because he immediately, after they announced it, he tweeted immediately, like, put me in, coach, to the Blood and Guts pay-per-view. Or the Blood and Guts special.
We all know he's going to do a coffin drop off the top. Assuming there's no... They may do the WCW style of War Games match, which is a roof. Mm-hmm. But we'll see. What's next for Chris Jericho? Obviously, you're pitching eventually part of the War Games match. I would love... Obviously, also, should be said, Chris Jericho has Fozzy dates coming up. So this, we may not be able to see Chris Jericho
for a little bit, but the rest of the Inner Circle is there.
Also true. It could be Hager, Santana Ortiz, and Sammy Guevara instead. My pitch, but I do really like your idea, but my pitch for Chris Jericho is to be a whiny baby and establish his own mid-card.
I think we'll be getting a lot of Chris Jericho via satellite over the next couple of weeks.
That's possible. But I like the idea of Chris Jericho. I think you got to use Chris Jericho now to establish this mid-card title. And I think him being a whiny baby, like, oh, I'm going to make this myself. This is my title. And then he loses it to Darby Allin. Right? I think that would be a great moment. And then Darby loses immediately to Sammy Guevara from some shitty way or something. Or whatever it is. I think that would be fun. Or Chris Jericho makes the mid-card title and goes on the Fozzy tour dates and says, I'm going to give this to Sammy Guevara. He's going to defend it for me.
That could be interesting. I do think that we're not getting a new challenger for a title quite yet. I do think it's just going to be, well, we might have one for a couple of weeks while Jericho's on the tour dates, but I do think that eventually we're going to get Jericho coming back and trying to regain the title and get revenge on Moxley. Because there's no way he's just going to take this loss and be like, all right, well, moving on. Like, no shot.
Yeah. Agreed. I agree with you. I think you're right in the fact that Chris Jericho is going to still be involved in the world title picture for the however long. Maybe not around Double or Nothing. I think maybe we'll have, by then, we'll have some new person.
Yeah, I agree. I think we might have
I think the perfect pick is Pac.
That could be very good.
Pac Moxley. Obviously, they have history there. Put Pac, give him the shot. I think Moxley, I think, is going to be a guy that has the title for a while. It's just a matter of who gets it off of him. But I think Pac would be the first, like, pay-per-view level.
Also, how good does that belt look on Moxley? Ugh.
So good. That belt just looks good.
That's another thing. The women. Speaking of belts, the women's belt needs to look better, and we need a mid-card title suit. We've already said these things.
These things have been said. I give this match a 3 3/4 meatball out of 5. Mikey?
I gave this one 4 meatballs out of 5.
Yeah, for some reason I just didn't necessarily feel the need to go over to 4. I don't know, there's something behind that was just like, I wasn't entirely on the 4 spectrum.
I don't know, but I liked it. I thought I was really into it. I thought it was good. I thought it was good enough for a 4 in my eyes.
That's fair. That's 100% fair. It just didn't. I don't know what it was. Just an entire click for me.
Also, I did like the reveal of Moxley being like, look, my eye's fine. Yes, gotcha.
That was great. That was really good. That was really, really good. Okay. Well, that is, of course, that is our show. That is AEW Revolution. We have not booked. That's the wrong show. we have reviewed AEW Revolution. We are very much excited for tonight's card, and we cannot wait to move it on. Of course, the next pay-per-view will be Double or Nothing, and we'll see what happens. That's not until May, so we got plenty of time until then.
Plenty of time, plenty of build.
Mikey, where can people find you? Or what are you doing?
So you could find me on Twitter at MikeyEb133, and you can continue following the same podcast feed to listen to Mikey's Indie 500 every Saturday. I release an episode recently it's been Saturday or Sunday because of reasons, but every weekend I will release a new episode of Mike and Sandy 500 where I review and am watching 500 independent matches in the year 2020, making my way through the independent scene, learning about new stars, learning about new matches I've never seen before, and really digging my heels into the independent wrestling scene, and I am loving every minute of it. You could send me those match suggestions to @HitTheBooksPod on Twitter using the hashtag HDB500, or you can send them directly to me on Twitter at MikeyM133.
Awesome. You can also listen to both of our shows, the flagship show, Hit the Books, which comes out every Friday. That show where Mikey and I book our own version of SmackDown on Fox every single week. We book all the promos, the matches, the storylines, the rivalries. We book all those things every single week with our own very own roster. We're obviously sizing up for WrestleMania around the corner, so definitely subscribe. It's on the same podcast feed, so
got out of the Elimination Chamber rest stop, and we're continuing on the road to WrestleMania.
That is correct. So definitely sit. You know, there's so much content on this podcast feed. All you need to do is subscribe. If you're listening on YouTube, definitely check us out on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. So definitely go subscribe, and again, follow us on Twitter @HitTheBooksPod. Thank you, everybody, for listening to this episode, this special reviewing episode of Hit the Books. We'll catch you back around this Friday for the flagship show Hit the Books, and then Saturday for Mikey's Indy 500. For Mikey, I have been Ryan. We'll see you all around. Have a nice day.
Hold one. Arm drag.
Don't tell me. Mamma mia.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.